WJWA, mobile.
10-4-VWA, W4-DJW.
KWKN-4-VWA, how are you today, my man?
Well, I finished all four transceivers. They don't transmit and receive on the same frequencies, but they are transceivers. With the GPS on a pedestal, I couldn't get, because of the storms going over, I couldn't get good satellites. But put one on an airplane battery and set it out on the sidewalk, and it jumped up to 7 satellites with a horizontal precision, delusion of precision of 1.2. And I could get that down to like 0.6 on the airplanes. I don't know why I can't get it any lower than 1.2 on this transceiver. I don't know. Trying to figure that out right now. How about you? Is the motorcycle gone?
Sir, and I'm on my way down to the bank to deposit 10-5 right now. And I am second-guessing my decision of selling it. I'm already missing it real bad. So, anyhow, my wife has already told me that since I cleaned up the garage somewhat, and I've still got about 2 or 3 more days to finish it up to the way I want it, and I've got my little 73 MGB rolled out and underneath the Mustang on the lift, that my marching orders are to finish cleaning and start on the MG, that I am to have that MG finished post-haste because she wants to go riding this fall. We love her wives.
Mom wants the motorcycle sold so that she's got the space in the garage. She's wanting to park her car and my car in the garage. I don't think just removing the motorcycle is going to do it. But the MG, it's a ragtop, right? You ride around this fall with top down.
An MGB is a two-seat roadster. It's kind of like a Mazda Miata. A Mazda Miata is the Japanese version of an MGB, I think. So, anyhow, it's going to take a little bit longer than this fall to get it done. So, she'll have to be patient. But I am motivated to get it done, since the yellow convertible is the only other drop top I got that I can take out. So, well, listen, as far as that satellite accuracy, remember, you've got a lot of foliage on right there on the back of your house and on your driveway. And even if you set it in the front of your driveway, you're still looking through the front of your house. Any position you put it on concrete at your house, you're going to be looking through your house to get 50% of the sky.
That's true, but with the airplanes, I was running 2 GPSs, and I was getting like 36 satellites, and that was outside at the airfield. And when I was inside at home, I'd get over 20 inside the house. With this one inside the house, they'll go up to 3 or 4 sometimes, but then sometimes they go down to nothing. Whereas I never had the airplane GPSs go down to nothing. They could easily get 16, and they could like maintain low 20s for long periods of time. It's just a difference in the technology. But these are GNSS, which means it's not just the U.S. GPS, it's all of the others out there, too. There's like over a dozen different sets of satellites out there. And it is getting, I can see the different satellite names that it's picking up. And it is picking up the other things that are outside of GPS, which is USA. So, I don't know, just difference in technology, I guess. Maybe I'll have to run 2 of them on here. Maybe one's enough. When I look at it, what it's doing with those 7 sitting outside, it's down to 1,815 nanoseconds. The precision on the Raspberry Pi, down to the billionth of a second. It's down to 1,815 nanoseconds, which I was getting that to 250 nanoseconds before. So anyway, I'm learning. I'm still new at this technology, and I'm still learning. It could be something I'm doing. It could be like Bluetooth running, and it's like a big blinding light that overshadows the transmitter that is in the satellite that's 75 miles away.
Yes, sir. Well, now, as far as that timing, what kind of spatial difference is that going to make from 250 nanoseconds out to the 1,000 nanoseconds? What kind of area is that going to enlarge the targeting to?
Yeah, that's easy now. I went and did the math on it because I couldn't stand not knowing that. And what it comes out to be is 9.98 feet per nanosecond. That's the speed of light. It's almost, you could say it's a foot per nanosecond. So if it's 250 feet, it's going to build a box. If you've got four transmitters and they're all talking to each other, it's going to build a circle around a 250-foot area. And the transmitter's going to be in that 250-foot area. If you get that down to 30, it's going to be a 30-foot circle. If you get it down to 2, it's going to be a 2-foot circle where it's going to be. So where it is right now, it's a 1,800-foot circle.
Now, that's a clear differential where I can see where you'd be motivated to get it down a little closer.
Right. I'd like to get it down to a nanosecond, which is a lot of people have been able to do. The stuff that I'm reading is down to a nanosecond. And if you do that, what you can do is you can mount all four of these on a board a foot apart, and you can, like, have a transmitter out there in the field, and you can put them perpendicular to the transmitter, all four of them, and they should all receive, they should have the right time all the way down to a billionth of a second. And then you just rotate the board 90 degrees, and you get a billionth of a second on the first one, 2 on the second one, 3 on the third one, 4 on the fourth one, a delay in seeing the signal arrive. And I just think that's the coolest thing ever. That's the closest thing you can get to seeing RF.
Wow. I just, that gets over my head when I think in terms of that kind of computing speed. That's something else. Well, in the meantime, I think I'm going to try to hit the flying field in the morning, and it's supposed to be very nice. It's supposed to be, 72 at 9 o'clock or 8:30, and climb to about 77, 78, 11 or 12 o'clock, and winds are supposed to be 2 to 5. So, I believe I'm
going to hit it. I just pulled it up to look at what it is you're talking about. So, 0% chance of rain at 12 p.m. tomorrow, 1% chance of rain at 10, and 0 at 8 a.m. So, 8 to 10 to 12 is 0 to 1 to 0. So that's good. And then the temperature goes from 8 up to 71, 77, and 83 by 12. From 71 to 83 between 8 a.m. and 12. And it doesn't show any sign of wind, like there's not going to be any. That's pretty cool. That might be a good time to go fly.
Love to see you over there, but I'm definitely going.
Maybe I'll try to get that, get a free sky receiver and that laser 230 and take it over there in the morning. Just take one airplane. It's been a long time. That thing needs to fly.
Let me ask you this. What would be kind of interesting would be to see what the receive characteristics would look like in an open area such as the flying field, to see how many satellites you could get as versus there at your house.
Yeah, that could be it too, because there is a lot of RF noise in this neighborhood. Everybody's running two or three different wireless routers plus extenders. So I don't know if you've played around with those programs that you can get that allow you to see all the Wi-Fi in the area on the screen. You can see it, and you can see the tag name of it, and you can see its amplitude and its width. when I pull that up here, I see all kind of people behind me, people to the left of me, people to the right of me, people across the street, up a house, down a house, across the street. I see them all over the place.
I have two different apps on two different phones, and I used to use that capability on my cell phones on a constant, regular basis. Because what I would do is I would go in and set up the networking through a locked up wireless network throughout the building and for my digital imaging systems, and then I would run that down to the primary router in the building. In other words, I had a subsystem set up just for the digital imaging systems. That way, you know, there was not, wasn't a lot of crosstalk between different programs and tying up and, you know, log jamming their regular Wi-Fi system. And I tell you what, in some of these commercial buildings, you would be amazed. Well, no, you would know. Of all people, you would know what kind of RF crosstalk you can get and signal jamming from some of these Wi-Fis.
W4DJW. That's true. When I worked at the Gateway Village, that was always a problem. Gateway Village in Charlotte, there was companies all over the place. And we were on the whole, the bank that I was working for owned the whole building. We didn't own it, but they leased it. And they were constantly putting more and more routers in the ceiling, wireless routers, because more and more people, you know, you had several hundred developers there developing at the same time, and there's like 200 in just my group, and then there's like two dozen groups like that. So you can imagine the wireless routers they had to have, and they were constantly, they were good guys too. They were great networking guys, but exactly like you said, they were constantly battling. One, you know, you squeeze the balloon over here and it pops out over there. You squeeze it over there and it pops out over here. Yeah, it's a challenge. Those guys have a heart. They've got a tough job. But that's another thing I thought of. The whole time I've been working on these transceivers, it's been stormy. You know, coming over, thunderstorm, threatening of thunderstorms, rumbling thunder, big, thick, dark clouds. Very, very different than when I was setting up the airplanes. It was clear skies, hadn't rained in days. Everybody complained about how dry it was. So that's a difference, too. If I was doing an airplane right now, it might be that I only see a half a dozen, you know, outside instead of 30 outside. W4DJW.
Yeah, you know what? You're absolutely right. I hadn't even thought about that. But, yeah, if you came over in the morning and you could bring one of them with you, that might be an interesting little experiment to kind of set it out there in an area unobstructed and see just what you can pick up there as far as the number of satellites. I would almost bet you a dollar to a donut that it would increase. I don't know if you could say dramatically, but at seven satellites, I bet you it would double.
I might bring one over there. I'd have to bring a laptop, too, to have it log into the laptop so that I could display a terminal window on the laptop so I could count the satellites. They don't have any monitors or anything like that. They're just headless computers with GPSs, AFXS transmitters, right? They receive GPS, they transmit AFX, and they transmit via Ethernet and Wi-Fi.
Okay. Well, it would be interesting to see. I hope you can manage to bring that over there in the morning. But I'll definitely be over there in the morning unless something really drastic happens, because tomorrow afternoon after I get back home, I have a date with a large riding mower.
I've been looking at that for the last two or three days. Should I cut the grass or should I wait? Should I cut it or should I wait? I sharpened the blade for the lawnmower for the first time in 8 years since I've owned that lawnmower yesterday. I was at Lowe's, and I said, you know, I ought to just pick up another blade. And I didn't realize that's only a 20-inch lawnmower, and I bought a 21-inch blade, and that doesn't work. So I got to take that back to Lowe's, and I sharpened the one that I had, and it needed sharpening. It probably took me, you know, better part of 45 minutes to get that thing sharpened and balanced. So I'm kind of anxious to see how it does, but, you know, it's got to be at least high enough to where you can tell where you cut on the last pass, or you're scratching your head. Did I just run that same pass twice, or did I miss a whole row?
I won't be having that problem. And as far as lawnmower blades for 8 years, well, you've seen how much I cut. I barely get a set of blades out of a season on my blades. And that's three blades. It generally runs me about $75 for a set of three blades on that big 60-inch. And, man, I tell you what, when I take them off, it's amazing what grass can do to a piece of steel. I mean, when I take them off at the end of the... I generally take them off right around... I do my last cut around the end of November, right before Thanksgiving, so everything will look nice. And, man, the edges of those blades are rounded off. It's just amazing.
Well, that's the way mine was. Plus, it had a few dents in it where I... Oops. Like, they put surveyor's rods in the ground. They look like they're concrete rebar that's a half-inch in diameter. And those surveyors hammer that stuff in the ground, and the little red flags have long since gone. There's one up by the transformer on the front yard, and I've hit that thing a couple of times. You forget it's there after a year or two, but it'll remind you when you engage it. Anyway, mine were rounded like you were talking about. And I took it down to where it's sharp like a, you know how if you drag a razor over perpendicular to your thumb and you drag it perpendicular to the cutting edge over your thumb, you feel drag when it's really, really sharp, or if it's dull, it just kind of like rolls across your skin and doesn't do anything. That lawnmower blade, it feels like a razor blade when you drag it across your thumb, just seeing how sharp it is. So I'm kind of anxious to see how much better that does.
Which will probably not last very long, but I'm going to tell you. And of all people, you do know that machine relies pretty much a great deal on just the simple inertia. You know, the speed of the blade. I mean, you can just about cut it with a blunt edge, and it's going to shear it off. But an angled edge does do better. But it's mainly inertia that takes it off. But that sharp edge like that ain't going to last no time. I've tried that before.
Well, I had to grind it there. A file won't scratch it. So it's pretty hard steel. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out. I'm thinking it'll look better, if anything else, because the grass won't be beat off. It'll be cut instead of being beat to death. If you can pick up the blades of grass and look at the difference between the end of a blade of grass that was cut with a sharp blade versus a sharp blade, it's a nice, crisp, clean cut. Whereas a dull blade, it's like you took a hammer and you beat the grass off, you know, up against a rock. You know, laid the blade on a rock and just hit it with a hammer until it broke.
You're absolutely right. Well, in the meantime, I'm headed down to my... bank to make the deposit, and then I got to go meet another fella over there looking at the space in my building again. I'll tell you what, I've had six or eight calls, and I've shown the space about four times now, and I got about three people saying, I'm going to call you right, I'll call you right back, or I'll call you back on it. Well, I think there's going to be about two of those that are going to be real disappointed because they didn't jump quick enough.
I was listening to CNBC. I usually listen to them in the morning to see what they're talking about. And they were saying that that's prevalent. That's going on a lot out there. They were saying that also that people are going to have to, even though they can't provide as much, they're still going to have to charge more to make ends meet. So people are struggling with that at the same time because of, you know, inflation. They're having to charge more than they want to. They don't want to charge that much, but they don't have any choice. And it's tough right now until we can get inflation back down. It's going to be tough. They said we've got probably another month and a half of this to go.
Month and a half of what, shortage, or another month and a half of increased prices, or what?
Increased prices. Stuff costing more. And that's because, you know, this, all of the stuff that came with COVID, all of the free money that was delivered, that's all gone. There's no more of that. It's time to work for that. People aren't wanting to work. They're getting used to, they're used to not having to go into work, but all of that's coming to an head, and things, you know, people start getting hungry. And then the hunger forces you to do the things you didn't do before. So they're saying that it all evens itself out over time. And that's what we're going through right now. It's kind of like withdrawals after all of that. It's like being on drugs for 2 years, and all of a sudden now we're coming down off the drugs, and it hurts.
Exactly. And I'll tell you something else that's going to start giving us a little bit of relief on the inflation front. The oil price per barrel is back down around 100, and that'll give us a little relief on transportation costs, which should, you know, start to equalize out a little bit for, you know, cost of goods sold. You know, everything that you sell, it's got to get there to that distribution point.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are realizing now that the plan, I think, was to make it hurt really bad. That's what Ted Cruz was saying. Ted Cruz was on CNBC this morning, and he was his usual self, all about Texas and all about him. But if you can listen to him long enough, you can stand to listen to him long enough to see through it what it is that he's saying versus what he's trying to get the point across. He was saying that the Democrats were wanting to drive the price of gas really, really high so that would force everybody to get rid of their big Suburbans and all their big, huge cars and go down to Priuses. That's what Ted Cruz was saying. But and he might have been right to a point, but what CNBC was saying is, well, there might have been a little of that because, you know, it's a broad spectrum. It's like stereotyping. You can't see one person that is one way and say everybody that is like that is like this person. And that just strips people of their individuality, and you can't do that. You wouldn't want to be stripped of your individuality. You can't strip other people of their individuality. And what they were saying is, yeah, there might have been a little bit of that, and there's probably people right now that are realizing that it's got to be a balance. It can't be, you can't jump all in on getting over to green energy and abandon fossil fuel, but you can't say, forget about ever doing anything, and we're going to stick to fossil fuel forever. You can't do that either, so it's got to be a balance. And that's what we're struggling with is the pendulum. Nobody can catch the pendulum in the middle. It has to go all the way over to one side, and then a correction comes in and slams it all the way over to the other side. And then if you could just catch it in the middle and stop it halfway in between, things would be good. But people aren't good at that. W4DJW.
Yeah, I agree with your statement 100%, Dave. And I'll tell you, we don't have the capacity for power generation in this country to take us to electric yet. And until they start building some power plants, there's no way that we can charge that many cars to get everybody to convert over. And yet, I don't know, it's just my opinion. I see us chopping our nose off to spite our face by, you know, cutting off our ability to produce our own oil at a moderate figure, you know, to where we can make that gentle middle of the swing on the pendulum transition.
Well, the good news is people are starting to recognize that now. They're recognizing that it went too far one way and start trying to swing it back the other way. But don't hit it with a sledgehammer. Gently nudge it back to the center. Don't hit it so hard that it sweeps right past the center and goes all the way to the other. You can't do that. And when you listen to the politicians talk, they're on both sides of the fence. They're the same way. They're more into pointing at each other than pointing at the problem. And that in itself is a problem. Some people need to take responsibility for what they do wrong, and the other people need to take responsibility for what they do wrong, and then come to the decision to come together. You know, on free enterprise, you're forced to do that to remain competitive. There's nothing forcing them to do that to remain competitive, other than, you know, election day. That's the only, and so they have very little incentive up until election day to do, and elections are not totally about that. A lot of people vote that really don't know what the issues are, and then it just becomes a popularity contest, and that's no good either. So it's amazing that America is so strong that we can do all the things that we can do with all of the horrible influences from both directions, right? And we're so resilient, we can withstand all of that too. We can withstand politicians, which are, you know, bigger problem than resources.
Let me come right back to you, please, sir.
All right, standing by. W4DJW.
WK4VWX.
I had to find the desktop that had the microphone on it. I was off on a different desktop. K4VWA, W4DJW.
I'm going to make a comment, okay?
Yeah?
Directed at the left or the right, or you can accept it as being directed directly at the right or the left, okay? Have you ever, in your lifetime, seen or heard or even saw a news story that a politician says, we screwed up on that, let's change directions?
Yeah, I see plenty of that. I remember Reagan doing that all the time. I remember John F. Kennedy doing that. And I was only like 8 years old at that point in time. But I remember being, you know, very interested in what they were saying when they were saying it. And they would say, yeah, at this point in time, this was a bad decision. But that was a point in time decision. I remember that. Yes, very well. I remember that happening.
Okay, but when they did it, were they talking about the other party or were they talking about someone else's decision? And they were saying, oh, I can do this better and we'll move this direction? Or were they speaking in first person describing themselves?
So it's two different answers to that. One with you. Do you remember, there's a few days that I remember the day the space shuttle Challenger blew up. And I remember the day that, and I remember precisely what I was doing when my monitor, right, I was working on the shop floor at Michelin, and I was walking across it in front of the EDM tanks where they clean the oil, and I was headed out, I think, to the tool shed to get some replacement tools, and I was stopped by my monitor, and he told me, asked me if I heard that the space shuttle Challenger blew up. I remember that. I will always remember that. I'll never forget what I was doing the exact moment that I heard that. I'll never forget what I was doing when I heard that John F. Kennedy was shot. And that's, I was under a tree on Clemson campus. My dad was waxing his car. There was a picnic table. And we had a little radio that was set up with an antenna going off in one direction. And he was listening to some news station, and they stopped everything, and they made the announcement. Back in those days, when Kennedy was killed, the whole nation cried. I don't care if you were left or you were right or you were undecided or didn't care. If you were religious or agnostic, it didn't matter. When he died, everybody was sad. It was a sad day for everybody. Those are what we're missing today, all right? That's the difference between then and now. That's why we heard those back in those days, and we don't hear that anymore because we're not the same people we used to be back then.
100% on the same page. Listen, I just pulled up here at my office building. They're going to go in there and show this space. So, listen, I'll be over there around 8:30, 8:45 in the morning, and I hope to see you there, sir. So, KN4VWA, I'm clear after your final.
All right, I hope I can make it over there. If I can get that receiver put in that laser, I might bring it over there. Otherwise, I'll just bring the same old stuff. Anyway, take care. Have a good one. KN4VWA, W4DJW.